Welcome back to an episode of Our Interesting Times. It is my pleasure to have James Perloff back on the show. He returns to discuss, well, the I guess the current drama regarding his latest book, COVID-19 and the Agenda to Come, Red Pilled. It's faced, I guess, a predictable amount of censorship from the usual suspects, and we'll talk about that and some related issues. James, of course, is an independent researcher and author of several books, including 13 Pieces of the Jigsaw, Solving Political, Cultural, and Spiritual Riddles, Past and Present. Truth is a Lonely Warrior. His website is jamesperloff.com. James, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing very good, Timothy, and thank you for having me back on. It's not that long since we were on to talk about my new book, but things have changed with that, so I appreciate your giving me a chance to update that situation.
Sure. Now, I suspect it was doing well, then the boom came down on it.
Yeah, this was a book that was not originally intended to be a book. It was originally a blog post on my website, jamesperloff.com, called COVID-19 Red Pilled. And as that was in April. So as more information kept coming in, I kept expanding the post. And I really felt that the post was getting too long and confusing to people as I continued to update it. And I felt, you know what, we should really have a book out there. So I worked flat out morning, noon, and night, literally. To make this into a book, it took just under 3 months, and I uploaded it onto Amazon on August the 20th. And you guys, your show and with me, we did a program around that, and it was doing really well. It was frequently ranked number one on Amazon in the category of respiratory diseases. They don't have a COVID category, and it got over 50 viewer ratings, 92%. Were 5-star and 8% were 4-star, and nobody ever gave it less than 4 stars. And so it was really going good. And I said, you know, initially it had not been my intention to make an ebook out of this, but I said, you know, with the demand for this book, which sold over 3,500 copies on Amazon in less than 2 months, I said, we got to make it into an ebook and get it out to more people. So I hired a really top-notch ebook conversion company, and before we converted it, I made sure that every hyperlink in the book, because everything I say in the book is documented with an endnote. I made sure that all the endnotes were updated. If YouTube had censored something, I made sure that the BitChute link was there. And then on October the 15th, I was preparing the upload for Amazon Kindle for their ebook version, and I got a email from Amazon that night saying they were removing it from sale because I had failed to specify my rights to the book, which is impossible. You cannot upload a book onto Amazon through their what they call their KDP, Kindle Direct Printing service without specifying your rights. So I knew that was a falsehood, but they were kind of grasping at straws for a way to censor this book. So I was trying to follow their instructions to re-upload the book with respecifying my rights. And then 2 hours after the first email, I got another email saying that now they were completely censoring the book because it violated their content guidelines. And so I said, well, you know, my book, you know, it's all documented. It's documented with you know, pathologists and microbiologists and immunologists and epidemiologists and infectious disease specialists and Nobel Prize winners. So, you know, you guys tell me where I got it wrong. You tell me where I violated your content guidelines. And here's what they wrote back to me, very generic, which is very typical of all your platforms these days. It says, quote, we've reviewed your book and found that it is in violation of our content guidelines, and we will not be offering this title for sale on Amazon. We reserve the right to determine whether content provides a poor customer experience, end quote. Well, you know, I'm thinking, okay, so if 92% of their customers think it's 5 stars and 8% say 4 stars, isn't that a good customer experience? Shouldn't the customers decide what's a poor customer experience and what's a good? But they were saying, no, we don't care what our customers think. We're going to take it down anyway. So actually, Tim, I had anticipated this situation because of the plethora of censorship that had taken place across many platforms. I anticipated that the day would come when Amazon would censor this book. So I had already ordered a completely separate printing, separate from Amazon's print-on-demand service. And this is the identical book. It's the exact same book. And that came in about 4 days after the censorship kicked in, which was really good timing. And I continued to fight the Amazon censorship. Actually, I like having the book on Amazon. It's very accessible. Mm. In fact, believe it or not, Timothy, just 3 days after this book appeared on Amazon, I got an email from Japan from a guy who'd already read it in Japan. That's how good Amazon's instant printing and distribution is. But Amazon was absolutely steadfast in the refusal to take the book back on. So I converted from podcast guest and writer to publisher, which I already had familiarity with. I know how to ship out books. I know how to invoice people. I know how to do all of that stuff from long-term history as a publisher. So I just started sending out the book, and actually was very fortunate. You know, this really backfired on Amazon because Russia Today picked up the censorship story, as did Global Research, American Free Press. A lot of people picked up on it, and I started getting requests from all over the world for the book. And the first printing actually sold out, and the second printing is now in, and I've got a third printing already in process. So it kind of backfired on Amazon because, you know, there's a psychological phenomenon when you tell people don't read this book, people want to read the book.
Yeah, it's Streisand effect, yeah.
Yeah, so, but Amazon did effectively remove it temporarily from places like Barnes & Noble and Books A Million because they, under the original arrangement I had with them, they were acting as the distributor for this book. However, I was very fortunate to be able to hire my own mainstream distributor who has gotten it back into all those places. So you can now get it on Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Powell's Books. And over the last week, I had some good news. People in overseas were having trouble getting it, but now you can get it on in Canada at Indigo, which is the largest bookseller in Canada. And also, I didn't even know about this place, but the Book Depository now lists it, and they're in the UK, and they ship books. This is unbelievable. They ship books for free overseas to any country in the world. I should mention right now the list of books is out of stock, and I take that as a reflection of the fact that my distributor can't supply the online booksellers fast enough, and so their computers show that it's out of stock, and they're not sure they can get it in stock. But UK as a Book Depository does have it available, and they tell people to write your email address in, and they'll notify you when the book becomes available. So I got the book right back out there in paperback, and I should mention also that I supply it myself to anyone who contacts me at my website, jamesperloff.com, wants to buy it in bulk. I don't like to process individual orders. It's too time-consuming to create a mailing label and invoice and ship a book out, pack it up for one individual book order. So I try to leave that to places like American Free Press and Power of Prophecy and Barnes & Noble and other online booksellers. But if you want to buy in bulk, you know, three or more copies, and the more you buy, the cheaper it gets. So if you buy five copies, it drops from $15.95 to $11.95. If you buy a full case, it drops to $8.50 a copy. A case is 30 copies that comes from the printer. And there's all kinds of discounts in between. But there's also a free ebook, which I can get into, but I didn't want to, you know, talk for too long here. So, but that's kind of been my response. But there's also been other forms of counterattack against this book, which we can get into.
So if they go to jamesperloff.com, they can find links to how to order the book?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. How to order in bulk. I've listed all the online booksellers that carry it and how to get the free ebook.
Okay, that's convenient then. And so now it's getting wider distribution than you originally thought because of the censorship.
When Amazon censored it the day before it was going to upload it onto Amazon Kindle, I said, well, like, I know I could find another place like Shopify, which would give me a shopping cart and I could sell it as an ebook there. But I said, you know what, Tim, you know this. We're in a desperate situation worldwide. And I don't want to just be charging people for this book. And actually, after I paid the initial charges on the ebook, I don't have any more costs. It doesn't cost anything. You don't have to have any printing costs associated with an ebook. So I said, I'm going to make this book free. And you wouldn't believe the number of requests I've had from around the world, from Australia and Europe and the Middle East and South America and Africa for a free copy of this ebook. And one thing that's really made real to me, Tim, is how destructive the lockdowns have been. So many people have written to me and said, I could never have afforded your book if you were charging money for it. I'm dead broke. I have no job. Mm-hmm. But could you send me the book? And I actually initially made it into a Mobi format, which uploads to Kindle. But my conversion company also made it into EPUB, which is used, I think it's used on iPads, and it's a very common ebook format. And then one of my readers very kindly converted it into a PDF. And now this is not the typical PDF that you get. This PDF is just like an ebook. Every internal hyperlink is working. So if you click on a chapter number, it'll take you to that chapter. If you click on a endnote number, it'll take you right to the video or newspaper article that came from instantaneously. And this was very important to me in writing this book, because I know that when you present viewpoints that are contrary to the official story, the first word out of people's mouths is, isn't that fake news? Where'd you get that information? And so both the paperback, which you can't click on, but I do feel a lot of people do want it's comforting to have a nice paperback to hold in your hands. Plus the ebook, everything is documented. Everything is sourced. I have almost 300 endnotes. Anything I say, whether it's a statistic or a quote, is sourced. And I felt that was vital in this kind of warfare, information warfare that we're fighting against. As you know, the Event 201 people said they were going to declare war on so-called fake news, when in fact they are the provider of the fake news about COVID.
Yes, yeah. I think people who have followed this event since early this last year right now, I think can identify, this thing as being sort of an operation as opposed to a genuine event, and the response to it is all part of the same operation. It's proceeded now. Now they're trying to, they've rolled out these vaccines that supposedly, at least people were told that if they took the vaccine, they could be free again. But they're not even promising that now. They're saying even if you take the vaccine, you're not going to be immune from everything, anything. You still have to wear a mask and be covered by the restrictions, the so-called containment restrictions. So I don't see any benefit in hazarding a experimental, gene-altering vaccine when they're not even giving you any guarantees that it will protect you from anything.
Right. I'm kind of surprised. I do know that NBC News carried a story recently where they interviewed some people from sports stadiums and airlines who said that in the future they're going to require vaccination passports. And, it's funny, about 8 months ago we were warning they'd be requiring vaccination passports, and everybody said that was just a conspiracy theory, and now it's mainstream news. But, they haven't really been given as many benefits as I thought in exchange for taking the vaccines. You're right, you still have to carry a mask. I don't see anything that says if you have the vaccine, you don't have to socially distance. And of course, Cheryl Atkinson, the former CBS News correspondent who turned whistleblowers, she's got an article up documenting over 5,000 adverse reactions so far to the COVID vaccines that are out there. And when we say adverse reaction, we're not talking about a little inflammation at the injection site. This is people who have been put out of work and require hospital care or doctor's care. So very serious effects. And I should say one more thing about that, Timothy, before I throw it back to you. Moderna, Pfizer, and AstraZeneca, which are the three, seem to be the three main providers of the COVID vaccine in the West, all of them are using mRNA, the messenger RNA, which has never been approved before for vaccines in humans. They're actually altering your DNA. And the chief medical officer for Moderna, which is in my state of Massachusetts, his name is Tal Zaks, and he gave a TED talk where he bragged that what we're doing is hacking the software of life. And that the software, of course, is your genetic code, which, you know, I know writing I did 20 years ago on evolution, I was making comparisons between the human genetic code and computer codes. They both give instructions. They're both coded. And now we see that I saw a really scary thing from Moderna that Harry Mackow pointed out. I think I can bring it up pretty quick here. Okay, this is on Moderna's website. Again, this is one of the top five COVID vaccine companies. Here's what it says on their website. It says, quote, Moderna says, quote, our mRNA technology platform functions like an operating system on a computer. It is designed so that it can plug and play interchangeably with different programs. So here they're saying they're going to upload a new operating system into your genetic code. This is really frightening. They Moderna, prior to this vaccine, had never actually made a marketable product before. They've never brought one product to market. They've never made a successful vaccine, and yet here they are as a finalist with these vaccines. Of course, as you know, they can't be sued because they're under the 1986 Vaccine Act that protects all vaccine producers from any kind of lawsuit. And of course, the man in charge of the White House's Operation Warp Speed is Mansaf Slawi, who's formerly on the board of directors of Moderna. So, you know, you're talking about a big conflict of interest there. But that's the way we're going. We're talking about something that's very dangerous, is untested, except for some, you know, very basic trials, but that is experimenting with human beings. And if they make this an experimental vaccine, will certainly be a mandatory for the human race, would be certainly a violation of the Nuremberg Code, which says that the consent of the subject is always required.
Yeah, the I've read one report where there were, as I think, serious adverse reactions were reported in 3%. Now, if you have a disease which, based on the official numbers, which we know are highly inflated through all types of fraud and statistical manipulation and misreporting, which is 99.97% recovery, why would you hazard taking such a thing when it's well below the official death rate, which is, you know, 0.13%. It doesn't seem to make any sense given the risk. The fact of what we're, at worst, what we're seeing, whatever this thing is, whether it exists or doesn't exist, we're not. What we've experienced is something more aligned with a typical flu season. And of course, right, we see with the collapse in influenza cases, 98% this year, and we know they've borrowed from other diseases and other mortalities, morbidities, and called it COVID, you know, dying with COVID as opposed to dying of COVID. I think only 6% are identified as only dying from COVID, as 94% correct, had two or more serious comorbidities. So, I mean, what do you think's happening there? Obviously, it's a fraud that's being perpetrated against humanity in order to create a demand, a requirement for this experimental vaccine, which has apparently some sort of transhumanist motive behind it, at least agenda behind it. You have a situation where the pharmaceutical companies have been given, you know, in excess of $10 billion to rapidly develop a vaccine. They're calling it a vaccine. Catherine Austin Fitz calls it a toxine because it really
Right.
isn't functioning as a regular vaccine. And that isn't to say that I'm a fan of regular vaccines. There's much to be skeptical and critical of there, going all the way back to smallpox. The polio, there's sort of a fake history to that, which has propagandized the bulk of humanity into accepting sort of this techno medical
Right.
tyranny that's being opposed in the guise of a public health crisis. But they've been given billions of dollars to develop a vaccine, so all their research and development costs have been footed by the taxpayer. They're given complete immunity from liability from admittedly the serious side effects that this thing's going to create. And then they're creating a condition in the law, at least public health, under the guise of public health, to require people to take it, whether directly or indirectly, meaning that if you don't take it, you won't be able to leave your house or enter a shop or
Right.
stay employed. So, it's like it's not mandatory, but you'll die if you don't take it, because you won't be able to earn a living. So really, it's a huge ripoff of humanity.
Oh,
At the
yeah.
same time, they're apparently jabbing people, injecting something which who knows what the effects will be. I think they think the people who made it have some sort of idea, but obviously that's not being shared with the American people. The good sign is that there's a lot of skepticism out there, and they're frustrated with a lot of people aren't running to take this. Most notably, the health people involved in the health industry, nurses, people working in hospitals, as many as 50% are refusing to take it.
Yeah, and even above that, as some of your listeners might know, of course, I was a registered nurse for 45 years. I retired last year. And just about a week ago, I dropped off a copy of my book with one of my former nursing directors. And she said she agreed with everything I said in the book. And she said she's definitely not taking the vaccine. And I've certainly seen statistics. 87,000 nurses in the Netherlands say they will refuse the vaccine. And I've certainly seen hospitals here in the U.S. where it's well above 50% saying they won't take the vaccine. And, I have a chapter in my book, and this book is called COVID-19 and the Agendas to Come Red Pilled. One of my chapters is called 8 Reasons Why You Don't Need the COVID Vaccine. And actually, there's another chapter which is devoted to a 9th reason, which is hydroxychloroquine, which is a $13 treatment, which will completely defeat COVID, showing that you don't need a vaccine. And since I published the book, we've got more treatments out there. I'd mentioned budesonide in my book, which has had 100% success rate. But there's another one out there since my book came out called ivermectin, which also has a complete success rate. And like hydroxychloroquine is an anti-parasitical drug, which is very interesting. But we have evidence of so many things that can combat COVID that are not being discussed by the mainstream media. But in my chapter called 8 Reasons Why You Don't Need a COVID Vaccine, the very first reason I give is that, okay, according to the CDC, and you've already touched on this, according to their numbers, and their death numbers are highly inflated because they conflate COVID with advanced cancer deaths and, heart deaths and other things.
Gunshot
but even,
victims.
yeah, gunshot victims. Even with all that, they still admit that the survival rate for COVID is 99.74%. Now, Stanford puts it a lot higher. And if you were talking about the 6%, if you actually break down the CDC's own statistics, turns out that if you're between the ages of 20 and 49 and you have no comorbidities, your chances of surviving COVID are better than 99.9%. So we have to ask ourselves, why are they warp speeding a vaccine? Why are they pushing this vaccine on the public when it is obviously very survivable by most people? And, if there are some people out there who have, somewhat immunocompromised or have comorbidities and they want to take it, well, that's one thing. But to force it on the entire population, like they're forcing masks on the entire population, obviously there's a great disparity between fact and logic and what they're telling the public. And they're rapidly losing the trust of the public. And this is, of course, why YouTube and Google And Amazon, in the case of my book, has had to censor information coming from genuine scientific sources contradicting the official story, because they have to suppress that to keep the public in ignorance.
Yeah, and the I mean, the people pushing this, whether it's Fauci, the Dr. Birx, who recently resigned, and even Redfield, the current head of the CDC. If you look at these principal figures who are spearheading the COVID-19 response on the part of the government, they all have very checkered, questionable past and very scandalous past. But Fauci at the NIH and his AZT experiments in the 80s and 90s. You have Dr. Birx; she's involved in the AIDS scam. So Redfield. Redfield was caught, I think, faking test results when he was at the U.S. Army. And Birx, I think, helped cover that up. And again, typically being working for the federal government, they just fail up. They never fired or held accountable for their misdeeds.
Right.
And then they're the go-to people in the response. And not surprisingly, we've been again been sold a bill of goods on this yet another fake public health crisis. You mentioned Cheryl Atkinson, and she was the reporter that broke the story in the swine flu pandemic hoax in 2009.
Right.
And that's when the CDC and the World Health Organization, again, organizations were told that we cannot contradict on platforms like YouTube or Google or, you know, or Facebook or Twitter. But they were engaged in very unethical practices in order to pretty much sell a bunch of vaccines to basically make the taxpayer pay for billions of vaccines that were otherwise would have stayed on the shelf. Drug companies, in Europe, apparently, if a pandemic was declared, it would trigger mass purchases of these vaccines. The swine flu thing is kind of an interesting story, because that's something where we were told there was a pandemic and ended up not being one. And even whether or not it was actual influenza or not is questionable, because it originated at this huge a pig farm in Mexico, where again the symptoms may or may not have been viral. It could have been toxins and pollutants, because of the poor conditions there. That's often what happens. There's often we see symptoms, they're generalized symptoms, and the CDC, which is job is to hunt viruses, will say there's a virus when obviously, or it could be something else, bacterial, fungal, or even environmental with chemicals and stuff. But it's clear that this whole COVID-19 thing was planned, and it's been carefully orchestrated, as you can do the research and find out whether it's lockstep or the event 201. And there's been a global campaign of misinformation that is enabled by a very obedient and bought and paid for media that allowed a handful of very wealthy bad actors to gain a much more control over the billions of people. And that's what we're facing now. Now we're faced with lockdown. You mentioned the lockdowns and the mask wearing. Mask wearing, at least the way they propose people do it, it certainly is not healthy. It just is an opportunity for bacterial infections. Even if the mask did work, the idea of hundreds of millions of people wearing masks day in and day out, they're not going to use them anyway. They're going to touch them. They're going to spread disease. But obviously the effects of the lockdown. You mentioned people not being able to afford your book. If they can't afford your book, there's a good chance they can't afford their next meal or their rent or their mortgage, And if you're worried about disease, the biggest driver of disease is poverty. So if your containment measures create mass poverty, it's counterproductive. And this is something that's so obvious. It's so obvious that we cannot presume these people are fools or ignorant or just incompetent. They have to be malevolent. And this draws in the question the whole idea of public health in general, how it can be so easily been weaponized to actually impoverish and enslave the American people. In fact, the population of the world.
Yes, you're making a great point. And of course, this takes us sort of to the next step, which is the great reset that the World Economic Forum, which works in tandem with the Gates Foundation, has been talking about. I'm sure you've seen these ads where they say the year is 2030. I own nothing. I have no privacy, but I'm completely happy. And you've got a smiling person there. Of course, if you own nothing, then it all belongs to the state.
Yeah, someone's going to own it.
Yeah. That's communism, you know, where the state owns everything. And of course, the lure that they're offering, going to offer people for this is all these out of work people and students who are mired in debt. They'll be told, well, look, we'll drop your debt, and we'll, even though you don't have a job, we'll give you a guaranteed income. It'll be a small one, but the payoff for that, in exchange for that, they're going to demand. It'll all be digitalized, of course, your basic income, and they will be monitoring people to make sure that they're obedient. That means you take your shots. That means you don't post anything bad about the government on social media, whatever their requirements are. As we know, in China right now, which is a technocratic communist state, something that I don't think we originally thought we'd see when communism first began, and we saw lots of economic failures. But when the West began to provide technology to the East and to the communist countries, we saw communism advancing in China especially. And now in China, they're gone totally cashless. And even the beggars there don't take cash. They swipe a card. And but in China, you can get a job and travel and do other things, attend events and such, provided you have a good social credit score. This is obviously a model that's being played out for the West, where eventually when they have this great economic reset, yes, you'll get your basic income provided you are completely obedient to the government. In other words, you're a complete slave who does not rebel in any way against the authorities.
Yeah, I mean, you see that kind of being set up here. I mean, obviously you saw that with the reports of the lockdown in China early last year, and how that was sort of praised as sort of the benchmark or a model for how a containment measure should be followed in the West. I think it was Fauci who earlier on said there's no way something like that would ever be tolerated in the West, but lo and behold, they did it. And a lot of that was, I don't know if the lockdown was as harsh as they claimed it was. I wasn't in China. And I can't believe the news reports. The whole report of a novel virus emerging out of China, whether it be at a wet market or Wuhan, all that has never been confirmed. And again, if you just look at the science, they never really confirmed whether or not what was happening there was something a result of a singular novel virus, as opposed to the usual respiratory problems that the Chinese have in these highly polluted cities. Again, you take something that could be caused by any number of things and call one thing, one cause. That's a misdirection, or at least a possible misdirection right there. Because at any given time, you're going to have people with respiratory problems and illnesses that you can call it. And we've seen that now, as I mentioned earlier, how they borrowed from other diseases and calling it COVID. Because one thing is you get paid money if you have COVID patients, at least in the United States, the CARES Act. And there's a lot of financial fraud going on with that. But definitely getting people used to UBI. We're getting how we just recently they passed another relief bill. They've passed two. They passed two in last year, and now people are getting used to, at least getting people used to the idea of, of getting relief checks but not working. The big economic problem isn't the fact that people aren't getting relief checks; it's the fact that they're being not being allowed to work, and this is causing this huge problem of poverty. 28 million, families are facing eviction this year,
according to Reuters. According to Reuters, yeah, that's mainstream. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so what's going to happen? And then again, to this day, I don't hear, you hear some skepticism. I mean, obviously there's Donald Trump, who may or may be on his way out. This is, the election itself was a product of the pandemic that what we're seeing right now. But, yesterday he said that deaths are highly exaggerated. And then, of course, Fauci criticizes him for that. But Donald Trump is essentially correct there. They've admitted that, but nevertheless has treated the press as though there's Donald Trump again. But again, Donald Trump is pushing hard for the vaccine. If deaths are highly exaggerated, why are you touting this vaccine? If it's highly, that's the problem with the Trump administration. It's been sort of schizophrenic all over the place on this issue. And feckless on some of the other matters that affect the United States this year, the rioting and then also dealing with which essentially is a color revolution or a coup. And that also goes to the election results that are still, being disputed, is we haven't had so much an election as we've had an insurrection that's played out the entire year with the lockdown, the riots, and then the failed elections with the illegal elections in these six or seven states, bringing out the results. For now, they're going to install Joe Biden, who was obviously suffering severe mental, I guess, decline. He's descending into dementia. That much is obvious. And he's going to be installed as president. And I think you wrote an article about that, how this might play out in a certain way that was attempted earlier with Gerald Ford.
Yeah, that's correct. I kind of suspect that they want Biden in. I get the sense that they feel that America is at the point where they can degrade us into Bolshevism and communism at this point. And obviously, they're aware of Biden's mental status. They don't have, he's not the guy they're looking to. But it did hearken to mind. I did write a blog post on this recently. Situation that occurred under Nixon. Nixon and his vice president Spiro Agnew had won the 1972 election by a landslide. They took 49 out of 50 states. Now, but after that, some scandals occurred. One was an accusation that Agnew, his the vice president, had taken money while a public official in Maryland years earlier. Now, this was just debatable. Agnew insisted on his innocence, but it was suggested that he step down for the national good. And so Nixon appointed Gerald Ford as vice president. So Gerald Ford now became the unelected vice president of the United States. Then shortly after that, within a year, Nixon himself was forced to step down by the Watergate scandal. And I just want to mention, I know it's been a long time, but Nixon did not need that Watergate break-in at Democratic Party headquarters to win the election. He was a shoo-in to win, and there's no evidence that he ordered it. There's some minor evidence he may have participated in a cover-up. There were 18 and a half minutes missing of White House tapes that were subpoenaed by Congress, but obviously Hillary Clinton's missing emails and other scandals have far exceeded that, and people were not punished for it like Nixon was. The thing is that when Nixon was deposed as president, when he resigned over the Watergate scandal, then Gerald Ford appointed Nelson Rockefeller as his vice president. And within the year, there were two assassination attempts on Gerald Ford, which, if either it had succeeded, Nelson Rockefeller would have become the president of the United States without receiving a single vote. And that's something to really think about. As you look at Biden and you know he can't last, he probably wouldn't last more than a couple of months before he was declared unfit. So Harris would become the president. The question is, who have they got lined up to be her vice president? Is it Mike Bloomberg or who knows? Then something could be done to remove Harris, and suddenly you would have a completely unelected president running dictatorial controls on the country. I don't know that it's going to play out that way. But based on that historical precedent of Nixon and Agnew, I am concerned that we might see some scenario along those lines.
Yeah, the whole Watergate thing is interesting because that even Nixon himself said that it. Some people have speculated. Russ Baker wrote a book about this in his book on the Bush dynasty about how Nixon had been pressuring the CIA to turn over the files regarding what he referred to as the Bay of Pigs thing, which was really his word for the Kennedy assassination. And the CIA was not forthcoming in those orders, because showing you how much they respect presidential authority. And what's interesting is, of course, is the some of the intrigue with this is Russ Baker's theory, is that the Nixon didn't bring up on bringing bring George Bush in as vice president, which disappointed the Bush family. Of course, there was the Prescott Bush, which selected Nixon, got his political career going in the late 1940s. He answered an ad or something in California, run for Congress, and he ran for Congress. It was Prescott Bush that picked him for that. Some say it was Nixon had the goods on the Bushes in their dealings, with the Axis powers during World War II. He was able to he had access to files because of his position in the Navy during the war, and he kind of leveraged it. That's politics. The Bushes felt kind of burned because George wasn't picked for his vice president. Agnew was. But he did pick him to be ambassador to the UN, then to China. But Bush, of course, George W. Bush, has ties to the CIA. And Russ Baker linked George W. Bush possibly to the Kennedy assassination, the man being in Texas when Kennedy was assassinated. So there's this Kennedy assassination intrigue tied into the Watergate affair. Of course, you have the plumbers, and a lot of the plumbers were this people that came out of Operation 40, which tied back, these Cubans tied back to the Kennedy assassination, part of the intrigue there. And it was the leaks regarding, I think, Ellsberg, which caused Kissinger to set up this group, which became known as the Plumbers, to stop leaks. And it was the plumbers that apparently carried out this botched, curiously botched break-in at the Watergate thing. And so all this is tied into it. And, of course, then you have Ford, the congressman from Michigan, who's selected to replace Agnew in 1973. And Ford also was on the Warren Commission. And he's the one that manipulated the shirt, Kennedy's shirt, to justify the bullet, the bullet trajectory idea of Kennedy being assassinated from behind as opposed to being front, that sort of thing, that whole cover up. So it's really murky, but the connections are amazing. Not also coupled with the fact that, you know, Woodward and Butterfield and all these people who are entangled in Watergate had ties back to U.S. intelligence agencies, you know, CIA. So it really is it isn't the simple story of a botched break-in and an attempted cover-up which forced Nixon to resign. It was a coup attempt, a successful coup, by the way, and just another example of a president being brought down, not by gunshot, but by the threat of impeachment. He resigned in August 1974. And you mentioned Rockefeller being so close to the presidency. And he's brought into the vice presidency, and as Rockefeller, I think, who played a pivotal role in getting most favored nation trade status passed by the Congress. And that, of course, that bore a lot of fruit in the ensuing years, because eventually China would get this most favored nation trade status, which would set China up to be this this factory house. And this sort of this ideal form of state communist capitalist system that the Rockefellers seem to love so much. You know, the Rockefellers had an idea of China. And the China trade and the imbalance and what we're seeing now with the geopolitical wrangling has a lot to do with our situation with China. And lo and behold, the Wuhan virus supposedly comes from China.
And then you've got the Rockefeller Foundation back in 2010 predicting, having a scenario of a future virus that would originate from China, but that the Chinese would be the ideal nation to handle that. Mm-hmm. So we see a lot of predictions coming from the same players. Yeah, I think that it's very interesting that it was Henry Kissinger who, in his White House memoirs, called Nelson Rockefeller the most influential person in my life, who brought Nixon over to China to start that shift. And that was, I think, the very important moment in U.S. foreign policy. It was the beginning of the transformation of China. It did not stop China from being communist, but it did involve a lot of American investment and a lot of technology going into China, which would make it into this super technocratic communist state that apparently is a model for the world of the future.
Yeah, and you have Kissinger himself as the arch diplomat in the 1970s, working these deals. One thing is the petrodollar arrangement in the wake of the collapse of the Bretton Woods system and the cutting off the last ties to gold from the U.S. dollar. You had the floating dollar, but then they instituted this petrodollar system where all oil sales would be denominated in dollars, and pretty soon that would pretty much translate into all international trade being denominated in dollars, which would create this demand for dollars at the very time when U.S. debt was exploding. And this would allow for the U.S. government to tap the global source of credit. This would create an artificially strong dollar despite its debasement globally. But this would also set up the macroeconomic effect where the U.S. would be industrialized, which seems to be an objective of the oligarchs, is you get an industry and production outside America where labor is organized and there's solidarity, and you can export it to these countries and then tap in the cheap labor sources there. And rebalancing the global trade is a big part of negotiating that. These things unfold in decades, so it's these things are never really handled electorally or a political campaigning. You can't explain it on a bumper sticker. And these oligarchs, they think decades, if not centuries ahead. It's multi-generational. And we saw this, what we're seeing now is talking 50, 60 years of policies coming to fruition. Now the bitter fruits, of this, but the sort of the deindustrialization of the United States required an overvalued dollar to subsidize imports, and this would subsidize export. You know, this would subsidize industry overseas, and we've seen the shifting of production to China and other countries like Asia and bringing it out from the West. And now we see the effects of that now. And now maybe one of the things that may have got Trump on the wrong side of the oligarchs was that he at least gave lip service to redirecting production back to the United States with higher tariffs and sort of his America First rhetoric, if not policies. And that seemed to be too much for him. And that's why you can't look at the declared pandemic and take it and look at the election as two separate events, disparate events. They're all connected. Right. It's one big, color revolution in the United States. For some reason, the United States being the world superpower has to be brought down through the lockdown in order to facilitate their great reset, which seems to be almost like they're going through all the marbles in this game and this time around with this one. Because it's virtually the entire Western world has been shut down by it with these continual COVID, warnings and lockdowns, second waves and, supposedly mutant viruses emerging out of the UK, to justify tier four lockdowns, suspending Christmas, suspending, religious holidays. So it's a whole economic cultural transformation that they appear to be orchestrating under the cover of a pandemic hoax or a false public health crisis.
Yeah, Catherine Austin Fitz, who I think you mentioned earlier, has just done a very fine interview where she talks about how the central bankers needed the COVID crisis in order to generate this great reset. But you're quite right, it's a long-term plan. It's interesting if you look at the creation of the Fed in 1913, how they were looking ahead to the Fed financing wars over time and ultimately turning that system over to a global financial system. It was never intended to be completely permanent. And you also talked about trade. I know that in 1945, 98% of all products in America were made in America. And that gradually transformed. You had NAFTA in the early 90s and the World Trade Organization and the gradual movement of American production into Mexico and China and places like that until very few products were being made in America. That was also part of a long-term plan and certainly was part of the destruction of the American economy, which is many, many, many steps to it now. The horrific national debt, which is unpayable. And now you've got destruction of the middle-class businesses by the COVID crisis, exacerbated, of course, during the summer by the post-George Floyd and other racial incidents, which saw many businesses burn down. They were just getting back on their feet. Now they're being destroyed by actual violence. It's undeniable that this is all part of a overarching plan to bring about this great reset and really the enslavement of mankind if they achieve that. So yeah, there's a lot at stake, and COVID is a major, major facet in it. It's invisible, so it's very convenient to blame is on something you can't see, kind of like terrorism. And after 9/11, the invisible enemy, you know, you got to watch out for these terrorists that never showed up again at any airports, but you got to strip down and be x-rayed, you know, subject yourself to the loss of your freedoms. And they're taking that to a much greater step right now. Of course, I was working on a book on 9/11, a major, major book at the time that the COVID crisis broke out, but I dropped that book completely because I could see that they had their foot on the accelerator and that they were moving ahead with an attempt to completely implement the New World Order that we've warned about now for decades, going back to, you know, UN, EU, League of Nations, Council on Foreign Relations, all these stepping stones towards, you know, NAFTA and North American Union, European Union, Euro, all of these things moving towards consolidation, now really coming to complete fruition.
Yeah, I mean, if you look back over the years, it's kind of seeing a culmination of these events, because the American people have not held this cabal or elite group accountable for their crimes, be it whether it's the Kennedy assassination, you know, Vietnam, or 9/11. And so there's no consequences for these things. You have, I mean, sooner or later, something bad was gonna happen. And it's happened. A lot of bad things have happened to a lot of people around the world. Now it's karma. And now the Americans, bad things happen to the American people. And right. But, you know, but no one could have predicted, you know, a made-up pandemic, although apparently they did with lockstep, you reckon the Rockefeller lockstep, and also with Event 201, which was a war game scenario planned, done in conjunction, you know, with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the World Health Organization, Johns Hopkins University. And they foresaw the very thing that occurred a few months later, allegedly. But if you look at this, everything in the United States is the state of, you know, education, the medical industry, government corruption, the consolidation, corruption of the media. These things have been deteriorated for a very long time, and it just came to a head. Perhaps the time was early 2020 for the plan to be implemented. You know, it's there's an astonishing level of ignorance. I think 30 million adults in the U.S. can't read above a third grade level. 50% can't read above an eighth grade level. I think 90% of Americans of age of 25 and older have a completed high school degree, but they can't read above the eighth grade level. What does that say? And that isn't to mention of course, what's happened to college campuses in recent years. They've turned into indoctrination centers, as opposed to, you know, bastions of intellectual inquiry and education. Mm-hmm. So, and not to mention the entertainment, you know, what they've done with, entertainment, everything's kind of been weaponized to the point where now, you know, people are so brainwashed dumbed down in these things. But nevertheless, there is a lot of skepticism out there, because what's happened, they've created a lot of, they've woken a lot of people up in the past couple of years. You know, I think there's a lot more people out there, millions and more, who are aware, of these things now, whether it's the media. You know, the media kind of, I think, shot its wad on this election. I think they in denying any evidence of election fraud, at least 75 million Americans looking and going, what? And the good news is that what we've been saying is people like you and me, we're right. The bad news is we're right. And so now it's time for, the people in the middle, the sheep, are never going to wake up to this. They can't. They're too brain damaged. But I do think there's a huge mass of people who are now going, what? What's going on here? And that's the sense I get, is that tens of millions have woken up to this. How do you build a political coalition around it when there's no organization, And they're still relying on established institutions to investigate these things or to work these things out. They still think there are adults in the room that are in charge, are going to take care of this. But we know that Department of Justice isn't going to do anything. The courts aren't going to do anything. There's no newspaper you can go to with a story and go, hey, there's a big scandal here. What does this mass of people do? What do they do?
Right. You're right about there's this potential wake up. I know that if you take autism, because we were talking earlier about vaccines, I find that the people who are most alert to the dangers of vaccines are people who have been personally impacted. If you've got a child who developed autism within days of a vaccine, they are the people you can talk to about this. And by the same token, we now have millions of people who are out of work as a result of the lockdowns. I think they are much more open than they would have been before because of the personal impact that they've experienced. So I do think that there's an opportunity here to reach people and pull them out of the matrix. At the same time, you're right, they need the alt media, which they're working so hard as a practice in Event 201 to suppress, because if they keep turning to mainstream media, mainstream media has never questioned the government's narrative unless it happened to suit their purposes on a particular instance. If they keep relying on mainstream media, they will never get out of it. They, you know, actually, Timothy, you know, it's been pointed out that if just questions that you and me ask about COVID were asked on CNN and MSNBC, then a lot of people wake up very quickly. But because people aren't tuned in to you and me, for the most part, but they're tuned into those mainstream microphones, they never hear the very simple logical questions that could open the door out of the matrix for them.
Yeah, and they it's kind of, there's a weird, not a, there's kind of a evil genius to this, where they lock everyone down, they're not going to work anymore, they start home. And more people are perhaps watching these news shows, which raise the shrieker meter, as Catherine Austin Fitz calls it, makes everyone terrified when they listen to the reports, you know, whether it's the death count, you know, that they're running. And, you know, now they're conjoining two different flu seasons and calling it one death count with the inflated numbers, or the reports of hospitals being locked down, even though that those are probably as fake as the ones that we reported on last spring. Or they'll put things in context. They say IC units are filling up. Well, don't they always fill up around this year? And how often do hospitals have excess capacity? I mean, it's like none of this is put in its proper context. Or the mortality rate, where actually 2020 was less than 2018, 2019. So where's the excess mortality? If you don't have excess mortality, do we have a pandemic? It used to be that a pandemic, you required excess mortality with increased infection rates, but they changed the definition to now you just have to reports of infections and, you know, in several different parts of the world. So now you don't even have to have death for a serious pandemic. Most people think a serious pandemic would entail increased death. Otherwise, what's the point of turning everyone's world upside down and shutting down society, making everyone miserable and impoverishing everybody to the point where they do get sick because they suffer malnutrition or exposure? I mean, you may get a cold, so let's shut the economy down. So now you're facing eviction in midwinter. That makes sense.
Yeah, and it's not even deaths. It's the most of the people aren't even getting sick from this. It's just that they've tested positive for COVID. I thought it was very interesting that Kerry Mullis, who invented the PCR test, died just before the outbreak took place, because, you know, he's on record now. This showed up where there's a video where he says Fauci doesn't know anything about anything. Mm-hmm. And he's also stated that the PCR test, which he himself invented, cannot be used to diagnose disease or infectiousness. All it shows is some fragments of virus DNA. And I quote in my book, Beta Stadler, who was the former head of the Institute of Immunology in Bern, Switzerland. He says, all it shows you is some fragments of virus that the DNA, that it may have been dead for many months.
Yes.
You encountered it before, but it doesn't mean you have the disease, doesn't mean you're infectious. Yet that's what they're using to panic the people, with the headline says 10,000 new cases. They're talking about positive tests. The test actually is quite meaningless. Just as with the flu, you know, if you had a few flu viruses in you, but you didn't have any fever, you weren't sick, you were perfectly normal, you wouldn't say you had a case of the flu. And likewise, all of us have some cancer cells. But unless those cancer cells proliferate and you become ill from them, you don't say you've got a case of cancer. yet they're doing, again, this is so illogical. They're saying you have a case of COVID if we detect it on the PCR test, even though you're 100% healthy. You've got to be in quarantine now. This is, you know, I'm a registered nurse for 45 years. We've never quarantined healthy people before, and it's never happened in the history of America before. We're changing, it's like Orwellian, we're changing the definitions now. The requirements for quarantine, the definition of herd immunity has been changed from a lot of people get a virus and they pass it on and it weakens and it disappears to now you only get herd immunity from vaccines. This is, again, this is Orwellian. This is newspeak. It's not in accord with what we know historically. And this is why they have to keep the people dumbed down. But yes, we're headed into a dystopian world unless we resist it and keep the people informed on a level that they can understand.
Well, that's why they have people still wearing masks. And even though they didn't do that until the summer, we were told not to wear them, and then we're told to wear them, and not without any guidance of what type of mask or how to wear them. You know, even if they were effective, this that type of mask, you know, campaign is absurd on its face. But it's there to maintain the illusion or the appearance of a problem, because otherwise people would have been walking around without masks on. They notice there's no problem, and it's already happening now where people just aren't complying. This is our headline today that there was a huge amount of holiday travel that the CDC is pounding, I guess they're collectively pounding their fist on the table saying, why aren't you listening to us? You know, we told you to cancel Thanksgiving. We told you to cancel Christmas, and people didn't, and now you know, nothing's really happening. Although they'll cite positive test results and these things. And of course, we're going into cold and flu season. So undoubtedly, there's going to be people who are going to get sick, as they do every other year. It's nothing particularly unique or threatening about it, other than it's any other year. You don't shut society down. The effects of the lockdown, not just, you know, on the economy, just on people's psyche. I think there was a study that came out and said that they did a poll, and 1 in 4, 25% of adolescents have contemplated suicide during the lockdown. There is now a cause of death they have in retirement homes, in old age homes, is called failure to thrive. And what that is just people, old people who are left isolated, uncared for, giving up. And that's one of the, you know, other than a COVID thing, what really killed these people in some of these old age homes were the isolation, neglect, and the stress that they felt because of the lockdown measures. And, you know, a lot of these people's lifelines in these retirement homes are visits from family, sort of how family members act as ombudsmen for these people, advocates, to make sure they get decent care. Right. I know one case where a person's father, 96-year-old father, went down as a COVID death, but he died of dehydration.
Absolutely. That will happen all the time. And you're right. My father, when he was 98, was paralyzed from his waist down. We got him into an outstanding facility, but I was able to there to go in every week, fill out his menus, mm-hmm. visit him, act as his advocate. But now you don't have that. Now you're forbidden to visit. So even when your parent is dying, you cannot be there at the bedside. And of course, you're quite right, Timothy, the psychological impact on the elderly based on this separation is huge. It's enormous. And as you said, it extends to the adolescents as well. You know, I have a friend who her nieces are in a school in here in Massachusetts. And, you know, at lunchtime, they have to sit in their own separate bubble. They can't even talk to each other at lunchtime. Just imagine the psychological impact of not being able to interact with your peers all over a disease. And I got to mention this, Timothy. I want to make sure we include this. A study just came out of China over the past week. It was an examination of 10 million people, and they found that there was not a single case of asymptomatic transmission. And speaking of children, I just want to quote the Daily Mail, which is a major newspaper in the United Kingdom. It says, quote, experts cannot find a single child under 10 who has passed on coronavirus to an adult, despite a huge trawl of data, end quote. So, you know, we're being told that children can't go to school, or you know, they mustn't visit their grandparents because they might pass it on to granny, but there's not a single case on record of that happening. I mean, hypothetically, could it happen? Sure, the computer model will say hypothetically could happen, but they haven't got any observations to support it. And science, I can tell you, is always based on observations. And we also had a study coming out of the University of Florida on December the 22nd saying that their researchers could not find a single case of asymptomatic transmission, which, as you may recall, Dr. Fauci himself said the driver of a pandemic is always symptomatic people, not asymptomatic people, which raises, again, the question of why is everybody wearing a mask and why are we social distancing? Because, and I quote this in my book, Oxford University had a study by two professors at Oxford, Professors Hennigan and Jefferson. They looked at 172 studies related to social distancing. Not one justified social distancing for COVID. So there is no there is no actual observational evidence for social distancing in mask. I have a whole chapter on that in my book. But we're living in a Orwellian world where people are obeying. I even made a meme yesterday of George Orwell saying, you know, even in my book 1984, people weren't dumb enough to wear a mask. You know,
Yeah, it's astonishing how people, how compliant people are to this stuff, to this nonsense. I understand because once you see so many people doing it, you just want to go and grab a loaf of bread and you put a mask on to get in and out. And I understand that. You know, I've done that myself going into some places. I don't want to deal with it right now, but then sometimes I fought it and yelled at people. All depends what mood I'm in that day. You know, or if I'm in an official capacity for the company I'm working for, I won't pick battles, you know. But it's one of these things where it's amazing to me still to this day how many people are just putting on that mask on, even in, you know, in their privacy of their own homes. You know.
Yeah, that's insane because you know, tests have shown that when you wear a mask, not only are you rebreathing your own toxins and your carbon dioxide, but your oxygen level you're breathing is 17 to 18%. Now, according to the to OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, people are not allowed to work in an environment where the environmental oxygen is less than 19.5%. So when you've got people wearing masks for 7-8 hours a day, they're operating in violation of OSHA standards. They're taking in less oxygen than what OSHA has determined their body needs. There are so many things wrong with this lockdown, Timothy. It's just endless. That's why I had to write a book about it.
Well, it's one thing, it's a huge bluff because it's illegal. And really, all of these edicts or decrees have no basis in law. So it relies on the voluntary compliance and just the acceptance of the public of the government power to do this. There really is nothing in law that allows this. There's broad emergency powers, but the only problem with that is they have to establish a real emergency, and that's something where they're under. There's litigation exposing, you know, the false emergency declarations, and obviously if you have a clause for an emergency that allows government to claim vast amounts of power, you're going to have a lot of emergencies. That's a pretext for a power grab. And also a wealth transfer, as we're seeing with the lockdown. It's one thing, what this really lockdown is really about, it's, you know, of course, we've referred to already, it's the destruction of these small businesses, locally owned businesses. It's a global carpetbagging operation, or an opportunity zone, as they call it. Right. And so they're targeting this sector of the economy because it's the sector of the economy which is relatively independent, you know, from the global corporate octopus runs the world, you know. And you can see it manifested incarnate in groups like the World Economic Forum. And you don't think it's a global octopus. How in the heck did they orchestrate a global economic shutdown without any resistance at all in the industrialized West, you know?
Right. I look back to the Iraq War, when in 2003, the prime ministers of Canada and Australia, this was caught on video, they actually gave identical speeches on the need for the war of Iraq. I mean, it was word for word the same speech. And that showed that there was central control over politicians. And this, to me, amplifies the credibility of the fact that, yes, it's not just a spontaneous response to a virus, but there is sense of control being exerted over politicians who are on the, whether it's the Rockefeller payroll or the Gates payroll, they're being paid to do what they say, and their loyalty is to their paymasters and not to the people of the country they represent.
Yeah, and we have to look at the various governors and prime ministers that are implementing lockdowns. These are the equivalent of commissars who went into the Ukraine and starved to death the kulaks, the Ukrainians, in service of the Bolsheviks, the Bolshevik regime. And that, I mean, that's how things, I mean, if things keep going as they are, that's the result of economic shutdown, because pretty soon you're going to have a breakdown in supply chains. The economy can't, you know, the enormous debt. You can't have an explosion of money printing and economic repression, keeping economic activity down without a catastrophe or a bomb going off. And that's probably part of the plan where, you know, they collapse the currencies through, you know, explosion in debt. The currencies collapse. We had to do it because of COVID. Now we have this new economic system where it's resource based. This is the sort of technocratic dream, and we claim all the resources because you have no money anymore. I mean, we have to organize it this way, and it will be energy based or resource based economy. You'll have universal basic income. You know, you'll be eating, fake meat or bugs. You know, you own nothing, as they say. The year 2030, you own nothing, and it's great. You won't have any responsibilities. But you won't have any freedom anymore, because they'll control. This is why they're also, this lockdown has not slowed the rollout of 5G, because the 5G network is necessary for the technocratic control that they envision with the Internet of Things. And of course, that Internet of Things, if you've studied technocracy, is necessary for the management of society. You know, and people like Fauci, or even like a flunky like Gates, pose as sort of technocrats, not so much Gates is more of an oligarch, but that relation between Gates and Fauci is a good illustration of how technocracy really functions, because we're not really governed by experts. Experts are shills for oligarchs. Yeah. And it turns out that Fauci is implementing their response to the supposed pandemic. Well, he's got a medical degree, he must be an expert. Yeah, but he's implementing Gates's program, who's a college dropout, who just happens to have loads of money, you know. And that's the reality of the oligarchy system we live under. This is the governing system we live under. And ultimately, this whole problem, this is what Catherine Austin Fitz writes about in her review, The State of Our Currency, is that you can't address any economic or political reforms without addressing the governing situation that we're faced. The problem is we are governed by a secret government that has no accountability and has the unlimited power to kill. And there's no accountability. And that's the problem, ultimate problem that humanity faces right now, is the not so secret oligarchy, which relies on secret government to screw everyone over. And they're doing it big time now.
Right. And well, this goes back in history and probably further back than we may want to go, but democracy is an illusion. And this is pointed out by Ferdinand Lundberg in his book, America's 60 Families, published in 1937. He said, we're run by an oligarchy of 60 families hiding behind a facade of democracy. But if you go back to the 1800s, the revolutions that took down the monarchs, the bankers knew that they could never intermarry into the line of a monarchy, which was ruling these countries. So they fomented, through the communists and the Freemasons, revolutions that destroyed the monarchs, and then they would bring about so-called democracy. But the people would only vote for who the newspapers told them to vote. And of course, the bankers, they ran Reuters, and the Rothschilds own Reuters, and Reuters gives all of its news feed to Associated Press. So ultimately, it's the same people. But the people just vote for who the newspapers and the media tell them to do. Like when Jimmy Carter became president, there were only 7 months before the nominating convention, only, I think it was 3 or 4% of all registered Democrats wanted him to be president. But then all of a sudden there was this huge campaign, he was David Rockefeller's pick, and he became, he was on the cover of Newsweek and the cover of Time, and he was, featured on all the major networks, and The Wall Street Journal said he was the best Democratic candidate, and the New York Times went a series of puff pieces, and all of a sudden he was a candidate. And because of the media, people voted for Jimmy Carter. And that's the same true the world over. But quite frankly, whatever corruption the monarchs were given to at various times and on the various lines of monarchy, they were still at least independent of this central banking system. But it was a requirement for them to centralize it and consolidate the control of the world, to get rid of the monarchs and replace them with the democracies, which gave people the illusion that they really had a choice. You know, and of course, in America, we get, you know, with the choice between, they give you the minimum choice, too. You can vote Republican or Democrat.
Yes.
You know, two choices that make you think you have a choice. But it's really that both parties are controlled, like the media.
Yeah, and we're seeing that now where, you know, you would think with the with this election debacle, with the overt corruption, the theft that occurred, that, okay, the media is not covering. You expect the Republican Party would act unified, because I've made the point that even you know, with this election, that the Republicans were in a position to correct it, to right the wrong, because they're the majority party. They control the majority of congressional delegations. They control the Senate. Nominally, the Supreme Court's conservative. The I think in 5 of the 7 disputed states, the legislatures are Republican controlled, so they can always reclaim their electors and correct the fraud. Yet none of these institutions functioned as you'd think, if you believe in the right-left Republican versus Democrat, you know, dialectic. Is the legislatures folded? The Supreme Court is nowhere to be seen. The courts have pretty much rejected all the cases on procedural grounds. No one has entertained the actual evidence, looked at the evidence. So there's been no real finding, other than the fact that, you know, it's pretty obvious. Even just it's data driven. It's observational. It's, you know, the idea that 5 states would all stop counting at the exact same time, and then those states would turn miraculously in early morning hours, you know, after the election, it just strains credulity. But nevertheless, the Republican Party, you know, at least the leadership was willing to accept it. Now there appears to be some sort of rebellion, and as many as 12 senators are going to challenge, along with it could be as many as over 100, members of the House of Representatives are going to challenge the Electoral College, and that it's going to create perhaps a contingent election, or you could have a last minute where the legislatures take back their vote. So there's some kickback or some fighting now leading into this January 6th, which is 2 days away, which is usually it's a formal event. It's just a formality, but now this time it's not. And some are speculating that, of course, this could go beyond January 20th. And of course, faced with the obvious corruption of this election, you know, you could justifiably you could see President Trump, some have urged him to declare an insurrection, you know, and seize the evidence and go after the conspirators, because this is no normal election. But again, this could have been stopped earlier on if the state legislatures had acted like, you know, where they should have, is call out the corruption, don't certify the elections. They had no business certifying these results. They were obviously fraudulent. But we have a whole media establishment which is pretending as if there's no controversy or no evidence of they think it's all Trump. It's, you know, that's they turn into a personality game where it's sour grapes or it's Trump's ego, as opposed to, you know, the actual evidence and what more than half the American people see, which is a fraudulent election. So, but then they're setting the stage up for what? Like what? Some sort of civil war, perhaps, because of what they're doing? I mean, breakdown of the political system?
Right. It's an ugly situation either way, because, as you know, if Trump was able to successfully overturn the election, then you'd have Black Lives Matter and Antifa carrying out a very bloody, violent riots and probably civil war within America. But if Biden is seated as president, and he'll quickly be replaced, of course, then you would see America going into gun control, Bolshevism, and totalitarianism. I don't see either option as a particularly good one. I guess I would go with option number one. At least you'd have a fight on your hands and, you know, some hope, in spite of the obvious violence that would be taking place. But I don't see a happy outcome, whichever way this goes.
No, it's a natural result of where we've come. I mean, what we've allowed. And so there's, perhaps there's, there's always a miracle that can always happen. I mean, you have a situation where if Biden's installed, the system could deteriorate rather rapidly because you could have sort of an imposition of sort of a Bolshevik type system. Obviously he's talking about a dark winter and mask mandates. His campaign slogan was Build Back Better, which is a slogan of the Great Reset from the World Economic
Correct.
Forum. So I mean, he's not exactly running a Morning in America campaign. He's saying it's a dark winter and expect more austerity, which is, I think, his mission. Trump, perhaps, evidently, they wanted him gone. And so they staged this fake election, and then the whole events of the summer. He participated in summer because he signed on to the state of emergency. He was feckless, at least permitted the governors to carry out their, tyrannical lockdowns. He could have stopped it, invoked the 14th Amendment, and ordered them to stop it. But that wasn't he wasn't he didn't do that. The opportunity was lost, and he could have even arrested some of the conspirators or some of these, tyrannical governors who are violating people's civil liberties and constitutional rights. That much has been found by the courts, but there's
Right.
never any penalty for it. I mean, it seems to me when a court declares your lockdown unconstitutional, you've created a, an egregious, you've committed an egregious violation of your oath of office.
Right. It's actually they are actually lawbreakers, and usually lawbreakers pay a penalty for breaking the law,
Yeah, but
So,
being a politician is never having to say you're sorry, I suppose.
yeah.
So why do they, I technically violate the law, and I'm facing years in prison. They violate the Constitution of the United States, and there's no consequences, at least not now. I mean, look how bad things deteriorated in Russia after the Bolsheviks prevailed in 1921. And if you're
Right.
That might be extreme, but what I'm saying is that if you couple this with the global Great Reset and the lockdowns, the economic situation is deteriorating and can deteriorate a lot worse and a lot faster if things continue because they're doing so much damage by keeping the economy shut down and running the debt up. And it's almost like there's almost like a plan afoot to do this. And again, I think it's a plan to destroy currency, to bring in digital currency, UBI. And that's a
Right.
social credit system. That's not a currency. It's a control system, as Catherine Austin Fitz says. And it's completely monitored with 5G. We're buying everything online. We can't leave. Therefore, they can tell you what your currency, what your sorry, what your social, what your credits can purchase, what they can't purchase. And that way, you can impose all types of restrictions on diet and consumption, where you can go travel. They've already established that precedent with the airlines saying you can't get on board unless you get a vaccine. Some airlines are saying that, or some states even saying you can't leave, which is completely it's not enforceable. But the governors like Cuomo have suggested that have been quarantining their states. If you come in, you have to quarantine. Again, unenforceable, not based on any science. It's stupid, but they're doing it. So it, that's where we are. The cure for it, the answer is just to call BS the entire operation, and say free everything up, stop these restrictions, but that's not the way things are because it's almost like a ratchet effect. Government assumes powers, they never give back what they take, they always give back a little
Correct.
more, so it's a ratchet effect. It gets worse and worse and worse. I mean, for Pete's sake, we're still dealing with the restrictions brought about because of terrorist of attacks of 2001,
Oh, yes. Many people have drawn a comparison between 2001 and what's happening now, and that was preparing us for further loss of our freedoms. Now, by the way, you're the first person who's pointed out to me that when Alan McGraw said love means never having to say you're sorry in 1970, that I nevertheless would carry through to the governors today, 50 years later. But just to get back to my book for a moment, because I know we've been on for a while, the book again is called COVID-19, The Agendas to Come, Red Pilled. And I just want to mention that even though this book came out on August the 20th, I have on my website, jamesperloff.com, continuous updates. Anytime a story breaks, like Reinhard Fulmich launching class action lawsuits, or this recent study by the from China saying that a study of 10 million people showed no asymptomatic spread of the virus. All of that is there. And the book itself deals with or attempts to deal with every aspect of the COVID crisis, including the lockdown, the economic and health impact, the civil liberties impact, experts speaking out against it. We've got a whole chapter on masks and social distancing. And we talk about the whole way they created the panic, the fake news stories, the misguided computer models, the conflation with other diseases, the death certificates, and the spreading of real death into the nursing homes, the tests included the PCR. And then we have a whole section on the theories about COVID-19, including not only the mainstream theory, but the bioweapon theory, the 5G theory, and Andrew Kaufman and Dr. Stephanie Seneff and Dr. Zach Bush and other people who've theorized about how COVID came about. And then I have a section on the deep state's end game, including population reduction, a whole chapter on Bill Gates, the global vaccines, why we don't need a COVID vaccine, a whole chapter on hydroxychloroquine, the digital ID, the cashless society, contact tracing, and the final two chapters, we lay out personal possible scenarios that may unfold in the future. And the final chapter is called Hope and Encouragement, where we point to not only the some of the biblical prophecies that have been made, but we talk about the global awakening that we touched on earlier that seems to be taking place. So that's kind of the book. And again, it's at jamespurloff.com. And you can get it anywhere except Amazon. You get it at Barnes & Noble, The Power of Prophecy, American Free Press, Indigo in Canada, and in bulk from me at my website, jamespurloff.com. And again, I provided it for free as an ebook in Mobi, EPUB, and a PDF formats. So I'm sorry for that plug, but I really want to get the message out there to people. I think it's very important that people understand that there's a great deal of documented information from world-class scientists. And I actually went, Timothy, I took the trouble of either finding transcripts or making transcripts of censored information, such as Dr. Knut Witkowski, the epidemiologist who said we need to develop herd immunity and stop the lockdowns, or doctors Dan Erickson and Art Masihi, who had 5 million views on YouTube before they shut them down, saying we don't need the lockdowns. I took the transcripts of those and made them into key excerpts that I quote in the book. So the information's all there. It's all sourced, and it's freely available as an ebook, or inexpensive as a paperback. But the book, don't let anybody tell you that the book is not in print. Even if you go to an online seller, they say it's currently unavailable. It'll be available soon enough. I have my own distributor who's making sure that the online sellers have it available. So the book is out there, and just trying to make that a tool that can help keep the people or make the people more awake.
Yes, I do recommend it. I read it. I have a copy right here, holding it right here. And it's a quick read, and it's a good source of basically the entire issue. It's information that it gives you a broad understanding of what we're dealing with. Perhaps they've gone too far with this. They've revealed themselves, and this is the way perhaps the good Lord works in history. Is He gets those who plan to do evil, get them to go too far.
And the Book of Proverbs talks about evil men falling into their own trap, and I'm hopeful that they have made the mistake of boiling the frog too fast, and that people will see the illogic of what the mainstream media is saying and what Dr. Fauci and Bill Gates are saying, and the clean logic of what the alternative media has been saying in repudiation of them. So I'm just hoping that by the grace of God that people do awaken or continue to awaken to the situation that is being imposed against them, which does create perhaps the greatest peril the world has ever known in terms of the future of humanity.
Yes, it's the hour of greatest peril, but also the hour of greatest opportunity. So
True. Yeah.
So, okay, well, James, thank you so much.
Well, Timothy, it's always a delight to be on you with you. You're so well informed, and love being on your show. And you've had a lot of outstanding guests. I'm not counting myself in those ranks. You've had some wonderful guests on, and as a result, you're extremely well informed yourself, which always makes it a pleasure to be a guest of yours.
Thank you for that. And I'll let you go. Give you enjoy the rest of your evening, and I'll post this soon. I'll send you the link for it as I usually do. So,
Okay.
thank you so much,
Okay,
sir.
great. Okay, thank you, Tim,
Good night.
and God bless you and the audience. Yeah.
Take care. Bye bye.